It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Throughout the hour today, we're remembering the lives of nearly 3,000 fellow Americans who were killed during the September 11th, 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center and Pentagon.
Present. Hold.
We remember the nearly 3,000 lives lost in New York City, at the Pentagon, and in Pennsylvania. They were mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, friends, and colleagues. Each life mattered, and each one left a void that can never be filled. Our hearts go out to their families who continue to carry the weight of that loss every day. We also honor the brave first responders, the firefighters, the police officers, and everyday citizens who ran toward the dangers to save others.
That was former Champaign Fire Chief Andy Kornstrom during last year's commemoration ceremony at Champaign's Westside Park. Thanks to Illinois Public Media's Reginald Hardwick for getting that audio for us. Among the dead were at least 10 people originally from or then residing in Illinois. In the World Trade Center, the list includes Kathy Bantis, 44, of Chicago, Chip Chan, 23, of Peoria, Andrea Lynn Haberman, 25, of Chicago, Suzanne Kondratenko, 27, of Chicago, Daria Lynn, 32, of Chicago, Robert Arthur Rasmussen, 42, of Hinsdale, and Susan Sauer, 48, of Chicago. Also in New York, Jeffrey Peter Miladinic, 43, of Hinsdale, was killed on Flight 11, and two Illinoisans, both serving in the Navy, were killed at the Pentagon. Lieutenant Commander Patrick Jude Murphy, age 38, of Flossmoor, and Commander Dan Frederick Schanauer, age 40, of Naperville. Beyond the dead, the events of that terrible day touched the lives of many more Illinoisans. Some lost friends or family, a greater number worried over their relatives who lived and worked in the city, and a few packed a bag and started driving east, trying to do something to help. Among them was Jason Dimas, who at the time of our recording was the division chief for training for the fire department in Aurora, Illinois. That was last year. He's since retired from the department, having served 28 years. He was one of six Aurora firefighters who made the 16-hour drive to New York to help victims of the World Trade Center attack. Again, we first broadcast this conversation last year, so we're not taking calls today, but you can let us know what you thought. Our email address, talk@21stshow.org. So many Americans who are millennial age or older remember exactly where we were on September 11th, 2001, when we first heard that news. What do you remember about that morning?
I was coming off of shift. We were, some of the listeners might not know, firefighters, we work 24 hours on and then we're off for 48 hours. And that morning, that Tuesday morning, I was getting off of shift ready to leave when the first plane hit the tower, the North Tower. And, you know, we had the news on as we do every morning, having coffee, and we're like, oh, those New York guys are gonna be working today, and that's a lot of stairs to climb, and just kind of talking tactics and talking about what they're going to go through. And then obviously as America watched the second plane hit, and we all knew exactly what that meant. A few minutes later, the speaker broke in the station and said that anyone in the station has to stay. You're not relieved. We don't know what's going on yet. And then that started the ball rolling. So I was still here, and I was held over for the next 24 hours until we left the next morning on the 12th.
Yeah, it's worth remembering that the uncertainty that was in the air. Planes were being grounded across the country. Schools were closed. Students were either redirected from coming in or sent home if they had already come in, depending on the Absolutely. Time zone. So you and six other firefighters are soon driving 16 hours nonstop to get to ground zero. When were you deployed? Talk about how that came about.
Okay, so in the Aurora Fire Department, we have special operations groups. So we have, you know, technical rescue people, hazmat, those type of things. And the team was made up of six of us, the department picked to go with a contingency from Chicago. So there was 40 plus members from the Chicago Fire Department and our six that left that next morning. We tried, from what I understand, is that we tried to get a flight out on a military aircraft, which was not allowed even to get us on board that. So we were, the Chicago Fire Department had a straight truck full of equipment that we're donating to New York. and bring with us. And we also had a van of our for us six that was donated from a local auto dealer here. We loaded up in a conversion van and had started out that next morning, right around, I want to say 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock, 8:30, 9 o'clock in the next morning on the 12th. Drove straight through, got there the night of the 12th. You know, you made a comment about teachers and students. And at that time, my now wife was a teacher in school. And she remembers that day is where she was with first graders. And it's amazing how the time has gone. And some days are like it was yesterday. And then there's days that it's a lifetime ago. And thinking about how many people that have come through the fire service and first responder world and police world that are here now that have no recollection of this day happening. And it's interesting where we're at in history when it comes to this.
Yeah. And we've talked on the show with teachers who teach this now as a history lesson with people who have no memory of it. So you drive straight through. Did you think you were going on a rescue mission or
we did.
A recovery?
No. At that point, we were just hoping that we were going to be able to do something. We talked in the van, the six of us on the way out there, like, you know, hey, if we can just, you know, make one rescue, we can get one person home. We weren't sure what we were going to see. You know, the thoughts and the processes that ran through us was unknown. It's unprecedented. What we, you know, the closest thing we can think about is Pearl Harbor, and it wasn't on the mainland, right? So we're driving there, and it was, you know, there's always some jovial to break the tension. As we went through Ohio, we got pulled over speeding. And the police officer pulled us over and like, where are you guys going? And why so fast? And he saw all our gear and our tactical gear and everything in the van. And he's like, you guys are good to go. I'll radio ahead. You guys got a clear shot across Ohio. And we got there and we did not know what we were going to see. But when we did come across the bridge on the other end of the island, you could see the smoke. You could see the debris in the air, the plumes of smoke. As we got there and we got out of the van in our staging area, it was so deafening. Definitely, the silence was deafening, I guess is how I want to say that. It was like a fresh snow because of the powder and the dust from the concrete, that there was cranes being moved, there was vehicles being moved, there was so many people working, but it was silent. I don't know if that makes sense the way I'm describing it, but it was like a fresh snowstorm where you come out and the plow's going by, but you can't hear it because of the snow muffling the sound. And that's what it was like from the concrete dust.
I know exactly what you're talking about, that feeling of silence that's so unique to winter.
Yes.
Or the environment you were in. If you're just joining us, it's the 21st show. We're listening back to our conversation from last year with Jason Demas. He's now a retired firefighter from the Aurora Fire Department. But back in 2001, he was one of six Aurora firefighters who traveled to New York City to Ground Zero at the World Trade Center after the September 11th terrorist attacks. So you were at Ground Zero, I understand, for 4 days. What was your role since, unfortunately, there weren't many rescues happening, if I remember correctly?
Right. There wasn't, unfortunately. And that was a hard pill to swallow because we get into this and the men and women that do what we do is there to save lives. Right. So we got there. A bunch of us got assigned, not me, but we got divided into groups. There was teams and some teams went and manned fire engines and trucks for the New York Fire Department. Some got on some of the equipment that were being operated there. And then some of us were setting up base camp and setting up a perimeter of walking around to see the site. My first assignment was to go with Chief Lockwood, who is now passed, but he was there with us and him and I were assigned to walk the perimeter of the site. And it took us quite a long time to get around that whole 16-acre site to see just the destruction. And not only on the pile, but the surrounding buildings, the surrounding vehicles, the surrounding businesses, and how impactful that collapse was. And so we were assigned to that at first, and then we came back to camp, and then we were broken into teams to start working in different areas of the rubble of the pile.
According to the center's... Oh, sorry, go ahead, yeah.
We were working 12-hour shifts, and you went out and came back, and that's how it kind of went for the first. I thought we were there 6 days, but it could
Oh
have been
yeah,
4 hours.
you yeah, you may be right.
But
I don't want to question
yeah.
your memory. So I wanted to ask, because the CDC says that an estimated 400,000 people were exposed to toxic contaminants or risk injury in the area. Obviously, many of them were first responders. I wonder if you or any of the people you went with experienced any lingering health effects.
We haven't yet. One gentleman has passed from cancer, and it's going to be tied back to that, I'm sure. The dust was so, we wore masks, we were given masks the best we could, but the dust was so thick that it clogged the mask up in minutes. And then there was places where we were pulling rubble out and there were still fires burning underneath us in the mask. You couldn't breathe with that. So we tried the best we could to be as safe as we could. But obviously in that environment, you can only do so much with the equipment that you have, and still trying to accomplish the goals that we had set forth.
What about the lasting emotional effect this had on you and your fellow firefighters? It was such a terrible day for America in general, but for people in the fire service in particular.
I guess I can't speak for the whole fire service, but what I can share is that on the way back, we knew that this is going to change who the six of us were, right? This is going to be tied to us for the rest of our careers. And I'm the last one out of the six that are still here. The rest have retired. And it's something that you're stuck with, right? And I don't mean it in a bad way. I mean that it's something that you have to carry. And we always agreed that it wasn't Jason Demas that went, or it wasn't Will Torres that went, or Randy Leak, or Tim Pogue, or Mark Lockwood, or Gary Posey. It wasn't those names. It was the Aurora Fire Department that went that day. And we want to continue that because it's our history now. It's in our culture. It's embedded in our DNA that we were able to facilitate some type of help. I don't know what that help was, but we did something that day. And every American would have done that. Every firefighter would have done that. I mean, if you look at the people that lined up at the blood banks, you look at the people that put the American flag up, you look at the love that every neighbor gave the other neighbor. America on September 12th, everybody wanted to be part of that solution to that attack. So I don't know if it's across the bear. It's the wrong words. It's an honor, I guess. There we go. It's an honor to carry that forward because we were part of that, and that is what's made me probably the proudest as an American. That those days, that was the proudest that I could be as an American to give back to my country in that form. But it was one of the sorrowest days as a firefighter that I had, and that comes with me too, because I did lose friends that day. There's gentlemen that work for the FDNY that taught at IFSI with me as an instructor that who they're gone that day. They were murdered on that day. So there's a lot of conflict, Bob, on the feelings. But at the end of the day, we were called. We had to respond. We did what we were supposed to do. And I think that's what lies in firefighters putting their hands up and giving that oath is we don't know what we're going to, but we go. And that's our job. The first act of courage that a firefighter does is put up his right hand and give the oath to protect the community that he serves for or she serves for. And everything after that's our job. And it's an honor. So at the end of the day, is there conflict and feelings? Sure. But I think the positive overweighs those weight that you carry on your shoulders, if that makes sense.
It does. And that was our conversation with Jason Demas, former division chief for training at the Aurora Fire Department. He's now retired, but he was one of six Aurora firefighters who deployed to Ground Zero after the September 11th attacks on the World Trade Center. That is all the time we have for our show today. I mentioned this at the beginning of the hour, but we are monitoring the big story out of Utah yesterday, the shooting death of prominent conservative political activist Charlie Kirk. He was, of course, born and raised in Illinois, and he was back in the 21st state earlier this year for events on the campuses of Illinois State University in Bloomington-Normal and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We want to hear your response to this killing and what you think about Kirk's influence on American politics. Beyond that, looking ahead, how are you thinking about the increasing prominence of political violence in recent years? Our email address, talk@21stshow.org. You can find that and our voicemail line and every other way to get in touch on our website, 21stshow.org. Let us know what you think. We might share your comments on a future program. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Harrison Malkin, and Jose Zepeda. Our conversation with Jason Demas was produced by former producer Anna Casey. Our digital producer is Coulson Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.